This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swing and a drive!
Swing, there's a shot!
High drive!
Out of here!
This
laser beam of a home run for Brandon Crawford.
First home run of the year for the Giants, and it's Joey Bart.
Is
Bellinger strikes out swinging.
Swing and a miss, he struck it out.
What a performance from Logan Webb tonight.
Camilo Doval gets the save.
Inside Giant Moments.
Yastrzemski! No!
And late night Lamont strikes again.
And his belt was all over it. The captain.
Great call, Parker.
With Adam Copeland.
Welcome into the Inside Giant Moments podcast. I'm your host, Adam Copeland. Great podcast for you today. We are going to talk a little bit later with Giants third baseman Evan Longoria, who, of course, started the season on the injured list and made his way back into the Giants lineup just last week. And then, of course, he got a hit off of Albert Pujols as the Giants lost that series in St. Louis. Not a fun game to lose, that final game on Sunday Night Baseball national television. However, there was a little bit of a silver lining, a little bit of levity there that, that brought some smiles to the Giants dugout in really what baseball's supposed to be about, right? It's a fun game. It's a bunch of grown men playing a kid's game. You get into a little league situation there where no mercy rule in the game of baseball, so Albert Pujols ended up taking the mound for the St. Louis Cardinals, and Evan Longoria got the first knock off of him. So we'll talk to Evan about that a little bit later in the podcast, but lots to get to from this past week in Giants baseball. And really the place to start, we talked a little bit about this on the podcast last week, is the Giants roster. Lots of changes over the last week or so, and it's finally starting to look like the roster and the lineup that Farhan Zaidi and Scott Harris put together this offseason. Tommy La Stella returned on Monday night in AAA this year in his rehab appearances. 29 at-bats for Tommy La Stella down in Sacramento. He hit .310 with an OPS over 1,000, two homers, two doubles, and five ribs. So expect him to get a nice heaping helping of at-bats against right-handed pitching. He's going to end up eventually, I think, once that Achilles is totally healed up and they're comfortable putting him out there for more than just a couple of innings on defense. You want to make sure you can put him out there and then do the line change. Maybe they do it the other way against a left-handed starter and then bring him in the back half of the game so he's not guaranteed to play as many innings. But this is a guy the Giants signed to a three-year contract a couple of years ago with expectations that he was going to be a guy in the lineup that fit that Giants mold. He does not strike out a lot. A couple of years ago, he led the league in two-strike hitting. That was when he was with Oakland before he came over from San Francisco. So this is a guy that the Giants have counted on and that they're planning on to be their left-handed second baseman and their left-handed bat. He also gives you an option at designated hitter. Had a big, big, big home run on Tuesday night, 464 feet. So Tommy La Stella setting himself right back in a groove as he enters the lineup as the designated hitter.
Got to one plate appearance in last night's game as he swings and belts it high and deep, right field. This one on its way. It is gone. Tommy La Stella on the second pitch of the game crushes one into the second deck here at Coors Field. And the Giants lead just like that, 1-0. Welcome back, Tommy.
To make room for Tommy La Stella coming off of the 60-day IL, there was a little bit of concerning news. Anthony DeSclafani, who's still dealing with that ankle injury, was moved from the 15-day IL to the 60-day IL. Now, I talked to Gabe Kapler earlier this week on my radio show, and he did say, don't view that necessarily as a setback. They want to be able to have some roster flexibility. They're just playing the game. Farhan and Scott maybe understand the game of roster maneuvering better than anybody across the league. And so they've done that in order to get Tommy La Stella back on the roster, maybe not have as big of a roster crunch in the time that it's going to take Anthony DeSclafani to come back. So the hope is that he'll come back. They said they want to get him up to pitch in five innings again. So when a guy goes down like this, it takes a period of time for him to build that arm strength back up. You can't just throw him back out there and say, well, you're a starter. Go out there and throw us five innings. You got to build that arm strength back up. So I would expect that even once he comes off of the injured list, he'll probably have some sort of rehab start, a couple of rehab appearances down in double A or single A, maybe in triple A. They'll figure that out and figure exactly where Desclafani can get his work in, because it's not going to be as much about results as it's going to be about getting him up to speed to where he was at the start of this year. And he was a big asset for the Giants in the rotation last season. It's a big deal to have veteran pitchers in your rotation, especially last year, like when it was spearheaded by Logan Webb, who is still a very, very young pitcher, has the makings of what an ace can be. But you start looking ahead to what it takes to win a National League West, to get into the playoffs, and obviously this year a few more opportunities to get into the postseason as MLB expanded the postseason during the lockout this past offseason. So you're going to get six teams from each league instead of five teams in each league. But you look at what they did last year with 107 wins. There's a difference between being built for the regular season and being built for the postseason. We saw the Dodgers do this numerous years where they were great in the regular season, then they got to the postseason and they just kind of fell apart. You got to have a rotation put together. And the Dodgers are a great example of that from last year. They basically used everything they had in that division series to get past the Giants, including using their trade deadline acquisition, the ace, the future Hall of Famer, Max Scherzer, to come in and get the first save of his career in Game 5. He was unable to pitch again for the rest of the postseason. They had traded for Danny Duffy, a left-handed starter, at the trade deadline. He never made a start for the Dodgers. They lost Dustin May early in the season. They lost Tony Gonsolin early in the season. So what we saw from the Dodgers last year is kind of what the Giants have done this year with the injuries to the rotation with Anthony Desclafani, where they've been able to go bullpen day periodically. The Dodgers last year we're going bullpen day like two, sometimes three times a week. It's just not sustainable no matter how many arms you have when you get to the playoffs. So coming back to Anthony Desclafani, when he is able to come off the injured list, that gives you another veteran arm in that rotation. So you could go Carlos Rodon, you could go Logan Webb, and then you could go Anthony Desclafani if he's in fact your third best starter. But you need to have a guy who can eat up some innings, and maybe Alex Cobb is that guy. Maybe Jacob Junis is that guy. Maybe Matt Boyd, coming off the injured list later this year, is going to be that guy. But it remains to be seen. So you want to get Desclafani healthy, and in the meantime, you want to be able to have some flexibility, some maneuvering with the roster to get Tommy La Stella back on. Now, in addition to that move to get La Stella back on, they did have to option Luis Gonzalez back to the minors this week. And the other move they made, we don't go a week or so without a trade here for the Giants organization. They traded Mauricio Dubon to the Houston Astros. Now, I think about Dubon, and obviously when a young player comes up, there's growing pains, there's things they go through. They've got to learn the speed of the big league game. They start to learn ballparks, how to play against certain pitchers, where to position yourself on the field. It's overwhelming, I imagine. I'm speaking like I know from experience. I don't really. I'm just going based on what we've seen in baseball over the last 140 years or so. When a young guy comes up, sometimes takes him a minute to latch on or to find a role or to get a rhythm or a routine when he gets to the ballpark. We saw some of the growing pains with Mauricio Dubon. One thing I will say about him, he's a guy who I don't think anybody would say not a good guy to be around, not fun to be around. He sort of has that boyish look to him. He's grinning, and the way I look at it is he's one of us. I know he moved to California from Honduras. He was out in Sacramento, but anybody who grows up a Giants fan and was following the Giants World Series teams from 2010, 12, and 14, you got a little bit of affection for those guys. So Mauricio Dubon traded out to Houston. He's going to join pretty good manager out there in Dusty Baker, and Gabe Kapler did say last week that When you get traded to a team like that, and Gabe Kapler was traded numerous times throughout his career, a handful of times, he said he told Mauricio Dubon that you got to look at this. Obviously, it's a business move, and you wonder about the impact on the clubhouse and what it can do when you lose a guy who's been around for a couple of years. But it means something, I think, to a player when he's traded for by a team that is in contention. The Astros have playoff and World Series aspirations. They've got a manager in Dusty Baker with 2,000 wins who likely will go to the Hall of Fame. And so nice to have him out there with another Sacramento guy in Dusty Baker. And the Giants don't have to see him 19 times a year since now he's in the American League West. So we can follow Mauricio Dubon from afar, but he is now a member of the Houston Astros and actually started for them at shortstop a couple of times earlier this week. So you say goodbye to Mauricio Dubon. You welcome back Tommy La Stella. And also in that trade for Mauricio Dubon, the Giants, you think they weren't going to add some depth? They definitely added some depth. They went out and they got a catcher slash first baseman from Houston in this deal. A guy by the name of Michael Papirski. So he's a first baseman and a catcher. And don't forget, when Farhan was hired a few years back, he did say no move too small. So if they acquire a guy and at some point they can use him, he's yet to make his big league debut, Papirski, but he was in AAA in Sugar Land, Texas for the Houston Astros. So maybe a name to file away in the back of your mind and then bring it back out and have a little note for people maybe when he makes his debut later this year or sometime in the years ahead. The other thing I think about with Mauricio Dubon is he was the first guy when you look at all the moves the Giants have made over the last few years to get back to the status that they're at, right, from the championship level teams from about 10 years ago, and you can go back to 2012, to, I guess it was 12 years ago, and 12, 10 years ago, and 2014, 8 years ago. By the way, it's crazy to think that at this point we're now 8 years removed from the last World Championship or the last World Series appearance. It was that many years from 2002 to 2010, so the same gap. So maybe some good luck this year on the 8 year gap for the Giants. Anyway, when I think about Mauricio Dubon, and I think about when he first came over from the Milwaukee Brewers organization, that was Farhan Zaidi's first trade deadline. That was 2019, his first trade deadline with the Giants. They traded Ray Black over there, and they traded Drew Pomeranz, the left-handed pitcher, who then got a contract the following season to return to the starting rotation. Forever Giant, Drew Pomeranz. Mauricio Dubon, I looked at that as kind of, okay, this is something that's sort of unique. You've taken a team that's not in contention in 2019. You've grabbed a couple of players that could be assets for other organizations. Pitching is always a need, and Pomeranz had pitched well right before that trade deadline. But they acquired Mauricio Dubon kind of for parts on the team, and they brought in a guy who was versatile. They brought in a guy who was a good clubhouse guy, and they brought in a guy who grew up a Giants fan. So pretty good fit for Mauricio Dubon here in San Francisco during his time here. But always think about that he was kind of the first big trade that was in Farhan Zaidi and Scott Harris's sort of wheelhouse as the type of versatile player that they were trying to add to the roster, and they made him an outfielder. He was just a third baseman, second baseman, shortstop when he came over, and now he's added the center field glove to his baseball equipment bag. So again, we wish Mauricio Dubon well as he begins his career out in Houston. And just sort of a fun little side note, the last trade between the Giants and the Houston Astros occurred back in 2011. The Giants sent Henry Sosa and Jason Stoffel to the Astros in exchange for infielder Jeff Kepinger. Remember Jeff Kepinger? The Giants and Astros have renewed their trade pipeline. They're probably wearing out the trade pipeline with the Seattle Mariners. We talked last week about all the trades the Giants and the Mariners had made, sort of minor moves, actually literally minor moves, minor league players going back and forth. They made another one. The guy they acquired a couple weeks ago, Kevin Padlo, came over, started some games at third base down at Dodger Stadium. The Giants traded him back to the Mariners earlier this week. So while the pipeline is fresh between the Giants and the Astros, they're wearing that one out. They're keeping they're going to have to repave that road, I think, between Seattle and San Francisco. So one more note, our MLB note of the week. We had fun with this last week. We talked about Christian Yelich hitting his third career cycle against the Cincinnati Reds. Yeah, it was against the Reds, but also the previous two cycles he'd hit were against the Reds. First player in MLB history with three cycles against one team. So Yelich made our MLB note last week. Maybe we should call it the Reds note of the week. How about this one? The Reds earlier this week threw a no-hitter against the Pittsburgh Pirates, not an official no-hitter, because they lost the game 1-0. The Pittsburgh Pirates beat the Cincinnati Reds without recording a hit. Hunter Green, the rookie pitcher, former early first-round draft pick by the Cincinnati Reds, actually pumps 100 miles an hour regularly, threw 62 sliders in this game for the Reds, struck out 9, a career high, actually had 118 pitches thrown into the eighth inning, threw 7 2/3 innings before he was pulled from that ballgame. And then a bases-loaded fielder's choice is what scored the run on a double play attempt for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So Pirates get the first win since 2008 in the major leagues without recording a hit. The thing that comes to mind for me is how deep can you carry a no-hitter into a game, right? Harvey Haddix is the one that comes to mind, not because I saw him play. He carried, in 1953, a perfect game into the 13th inning against the Pirates, those same Pirates, before a throwing error ended the perfect game, and then a one-run double cost him the no-hitter. Haddix threw 12-plus perfect innings, and he took a loss. Lou Burdett actually started the game for the Pirates. He threw 13 shutouts. So my, how baseball has changed from 1953 to today. So just kind of a fun note from earlier this week. On the Cincinnati Reds, we'll keep giving you some fun MLB notes as we get through the season.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, time to get to the fun stuff. Giants third baseman Evan Longoria started the year on the injured list, returned to the lineup last week, and shortly thereafter got a base hit off of Albert Pujols. Evan Longoria was gracious enough to spend some time with us. He joins us here on the Inside Giant Moments podcast. Evan, thanks for making time for us today, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. It's been fun so far. We had a conversation with Buster last week, and you're going to be our second guest of the season. I was talking to my mom yesterday about how I was going to do this with you today, and she said, "Do you remember the first time we ever saw Evan Longoria play?" And I was like, I've got no idea. She said it was the 2007 Futures game at Oracle Park. Do you remember that
at
game,
Oracle
your
Park.
First your first appearance at Oracle?
Yeah, I do. And that was actually the one and only time that I had ever been there besides when I got traded to the Giants. So, a very cool experience. I remember it vaguely. We were in the home clubhouse as the USA team that year. And it actually kind of looked the same, felt the same, you know, when I walked in there, kind of like the same excitement too.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, man. Do you, my mom was heavy on this one. Do you remember the guy that won the MVP of that Futures game?
Was it Justin Upton?
It was not. It was a Taiwanese player named Chin Lung Hu. And the only reason that, that's hung around, I think, in my family's lore is because then we get to do the, who won the MVP? That's right. Who won the MVP? Chin Lung Hu. Getting into a little bit of this season, obviously not the start to the season I think you were looking forward to following the surgery. You start the year on the right. IL. What was the hardest part of getting back to the game, or what element of your game was the toughest to get back up to speed before you returned last week?
I'm still in the process of kind of figuring that out. I mean, this game, gets harder and harder. The longer you do it, the players are getting better. I feel like I'm still kind of playing catch up, especially at the plate. The game seems pretty fast right now, but I've had some good at bats. I've had some quality contacts. So, those are steps in the right direction. So everything seems like it's starting to come around, but it's definitely been a slow process.
Was there a silver lining to the time at the start of the year? Did you get more time with family, hang out with your baby at all a little bit?
I did. Yeah. I got to spend that first, 12 days when the team went on that really long road trip. Mm-hmm. I went back to Arizona and got to rehab there. And also got to see the new facility there, which is really nice up at Papago. They did an amazing job. So, the minor leaguers up there are pretty lucky to have that facility.
Now, Papago, they did the thing where they built one field with the dimensions of Candlestick Park, one with Oracle Park. I don't think they built a polo grounds type field, like 600 feet to center field. But did you get to look at any of those facilities?
That's news to me. You're in the know. I did not know that that they did that. But I do know that the facility is beautiful. They have a really nice half field, and they also have a full field indoors, which is great for Arizona summers. And they also have a full turf field, which is really cool too.
Good deal. A cool place to go check out. It's always fun during spring training to go look at the training facilities for the Giants. So when you're in the rehab process, how do you go about honing your game? Is there like a part you work on first or a part you work on last? Does it happen in stages? What's the process for an established big leaguer like yourself getting in rhythm again?
I think it's mainly for guys who, have been in the big leagues for a while. I think the biggest thing is just getting your body in shape. Like baseball shape is just completely different than anything else. I mean, you could work out the whole off season. And as soon as you put cleats on and stand around for 3 hours, it's like a completely different thing. And you feel like you haven't worked out at all. So, I think just, kind of getting through, 5, 7, 9 innings of a game, and then feeling like your body is like responding the next day. The rest of the reps are going to happen in the game, the ground ball reps, the seeing pitches, at bats, all those things. But, in reality, I mean, it's just getting your body to feel, back comfortable playing the game again.
It's just truly getting into some sort of biorhythms with yourself. Was there any pressure from the guys in the clubhouse when you got back to shave the beard and grow a mustache?
Yeah, I'm still getting it every day. And I'm being reminded that, last May I had a really good May and I had a mustache. So, I'm about, one more 0 for four away from, you know, shaving a mustache in. So if it helps, I think baseball players are superstitious in that way, that we'll kind of do anything to get a hit or win a game.
Rich Aurelia used to do that when he was a shortstop for the Giants. He always had a goatee, and you'd see him go through a stint where he wasn't reaching base as many times, and he'd shave it off and try to get ready again. Do you have any superstitions about your game yourself?
I wouldn't say superstitions, but I think every baseball player would say that, like, oh, it's not a superstition. It's just something that I do every day. But, you know, I feel like I don't have anything that I do every day per se. Like, I'm not like, you know, if I eat a bagel today, like, I got to eat a bagel tomorrow if I get a hit type of guy. But, I mean, I definitely go through kind of the same routine every day. Like, I get to the field, I get, you know, treatment on, you know, whatever area it is. It's, there's always something that's bothering me. So I'm always like, you know, get a little therapy here or there, you know, kind of get in the hot tub, get the body going. I go in the weight room. I kind of go through a little like warm up routine. Usually we have our like hitters meeting, our advanced hitters meeting, kind of sprinkled in there somewhere in the middle. And then whether it's go out on the field and kind of work through ground balls and batting practice, or go in the cage and kind of go through my hitting routine, it usually happens at the same kind of similar times every day.
I think if you hit four homers tonight, you should consider the bagel again tomorrow. I think it's in play.
I didn't eat a bagel. I was thinking that because I saw Kurt Casale this morning and I asked him if he wanted to go get something to eat. And he's like, oh, I'm just getting I'm just going to go get a bagel and a coffee. That's all I've been getting. So I know that he went and got the bagel yesterday. So he got the bagel today because he hit two homers. So if he hits two more, he'll be back at Starbucks again, getting a bagel.
Yeah, totally. It's always intriguing to me when guys who have been in the big leagues like yourself for a decade have to go to AAA for a rehab stint. How was it hanging with the young guys? Is that kind of a fun experience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, playing in the minor leagues is like, I think like I take the experience for granted because it's like I know like, oh, I'm going to go back up to the big leagues like whenever I'm ready. And so it's a much different experience because it's spring training for me, you know, it's fun for me. Like I get to enjoy, like, I mean, that's always what I think the best part of spring training is like the results don't matter. You just get to like go out and play like in front of a lot of fans and like enjoy like, you know, playing the game. And then during the season, it's like, you're so results oriented and there's so many like more eyes and TV cameras on you that, you know, it's not as fun when you don't succeed. So, AAA kind of seems that way where it's like, it's an enjoyable experience. And yeah, I get to interact with some of the younger players that I only might see in spring training. So yeah, it was a good time.
I had a high school baseball coach who played AA for the Reds for a number of years. And he said the best part about being in the minor leagues is especially the upper minor leagues is when a veteran comes down, they buy you dinner. Yeah. Does that etiquette, is there MLB big league player, minor league player etiquette that still goes on?
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a spread. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of like a given, like you got to just get something, you know. But actually that the AAA team there in Sacramento is actually lucky. They have a really good chef who's like cooking for them every day now. That's something that I never had. And actually when I went back there for a rehab last year, they didn't have her last year either. So she's doing a really fantastic job up there with, you know, what she has a tiny, tiny kitchen that she's cooking in like for meals for, you know, 45 people. So she's absolutely killing it. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for the days that we're there, like we usually choose one day and kind of get something that, that they wouldn't normally get.
Good deal. Take some pressure off of the staff out there too, I'm sure. Yeah. Any scouting reports on some guys you played with down there that you were excited about? You thought were good future big leaguers?
I mean, I think everybody is excited about Elio Ramos. I think the prospect of him, you know, being a special player is still a very real possibility. He's got some abilities that you don't normally see. I mean, his bat speed is incredible. You know, he can really run. I think he's got a really high baseball IQ. He kind of understands the game. So I really enjoy watching him down there. The two guys that are up now for us, Junior Marte and Yovera, they threw the ball really well when I was down there too. Sean Gelly, obviously, you know, had a brief stint. So I don't get, dude, they have 40, they have like 40 guys in that locker room. So, you know, I apologize for if I don't remember all of the guys. And so they're kind of like shuffling a lot of pieces like in and out of the lineup. So you don't really get a chance to see guys play. I mean, Kai Tom, I thought swung the bat well while I was there. Bryce Johnson, there's a lot of good players down there. Alex Blandino, you know, guys that we saw in spring training that swung the bat really well. I think, actually Blandino just got traded, didn't he?
He did. I think he just got traded to Seattle. Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, we've got a, I mean, I think you see that, in the way that our roster is managed up here by, you know, how much talent we have down there. You know, there's a lot of kind of shuffling back and forth and the guys that come up here, I mean, Luis Gonzalez just went down there. Guy was hitting 315 for us, you know, or whatever he was hitting. And he also is pitching for us. So, you know, there's a lot of talent down there, a lot of guys that can come up and help the big league team.
Well, you give us a good segue, man. You come back and like four games into your return, you get into the box, you look out there and number five, Albert Pujols is on the mound, dude. That's gotta be one of the more unique experiences in baseball history, getting a hit off a guy with 600 plus home runs and 3000 plus hits. What was the conversation like in the dugout among you guys when you saw him? Couldn't you call it getting loose? Was he warming up out there? I don't know what you'd say.
I actually looked out there and I was like, oh my God, Albert Pujols is pitching. Like, what are we doing? Because like the game, at the end of that game, it just felt like it turned into a carnival affair. Like I made that error in the eighth or whatever it was. And then, Junior hits the next guy. And then we bring Gonzo in, you know, he's pitching, gives up a hit, two runs, like gets out of the inning. But then like we look and Albert's going out onto the mound. I'm like, man, like, what are we doing? You know, like, so it was definitely, I think it made that loss, that, you know, kind of embarrassing loss, a little bit more lighthearted at the end of the game. That experience was really cool. I mean, you know, anytime you face a position player, it kind of feels like a lose-lose. Like you know, you're supposed to get a hit. And if you don't, then, you know, it's just like a big L. So, I was definitely happy to get a hit. And yeah, I kept the ball and I asked him, I left it there for him to sign. So hopefully I get it back, sometime next week. And it's got, I said he could sign it with whatever he wants. So hopefully he put some cool inscription on it or something.
Got to look out for reach back gas here now.
0-2 is lined into left field. Evan Longoria's got a hit against Albert Pujols. And that's a sentence I never, ever thought I would say. That's the first hit Albert's ever given up in his career. Longoria wants to save the ball. He does. He wants to save it.
Oh, yeah.
And Pujols is going to toss it over to the Giants dugout.
Maybe he'll put like Adam Wainwright on it. Then you'll get credit for having the ball and for getting a knock off a big league pitcher. That'd be sweet too.
Yeah,
it used to be that we'd see a position player pitch like periodically. You'd see one like every 10 years for the Giants or so. And now it's something that's kind of, it happens like once a week across baseball. You see a position player out there on the mound. You mentioned like it's a lose-lose almost from a hitter standpoint. When you go up there, how does your approach change when you're facing, obviously it's Albert Pujols, maybe a little bit different moment, but does it change at all? Does your approach change? Does your idea of what you're supposed to do with the plate change? What's going through your mind when you face a position player like that?
Yeah, I mean, like with a guy like Albert, like obviously he was kind of just lobbing the ball up there. So it becomes almost like backyard baseball, you know, like you're just playing like in the backyard, like trying to see the ball like in the strike zone and really try not to swing too hard. I mean, you see like a lot of guys, like when Gonzo was throwing those 46 mile an hour lobs, like guys are just swinging out of their shoes because it becomes like softball. And so when he got two strikes on me, I was like, man, like, honestly, in my mind, I'll be honest with you, I told Cap this and he could attest to it. I said, if there was two outs in that game and I went up to the plate, I was going to punch out on three pitches. If he threw three pitches, I was ready to like strike out just to see the reaction of the crowd was. But you know, we drew a walk and then, and I got the two strikes right away and I was like, well, I'm not going to be the last out of the game. So I might as well swing if it's close. You know, and I was really just trying to put bat to ball. Like I wasn't trying to, you know, hit it out of the ballpark. So thankfully it dropped.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach?
Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
That'd be a hell of an accolade to be the guy that Pujols struck out. Like, the one strikeout would be kind of funny, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was like, man, it'd be cool. Like, it would be cool. But then also I'm like, I'm hitting 180, you know, so I'm like, maybe I should just take this free hit, you know.
Yeah, good mindset to have, man. Yeah. That's so funny. Have you ever lobbied to pitch? Have you ever thought about it or asked a manager if you could get out there? Would you ever do it or what could you throw?
No, I honestly, I would say no, I think. Craw is our guy. Like, Craw's ready to go. He talks about it every day almost, that he wants to get on the mound and pitch. So I think he would be next in line if ever that was the case. But then we'd have to find somebody to play shortstop. So
yeah, that's it. Craw's got a hose too. He could be out there pumping 90 maybe if he was winding up normally. I was thinking about clubhouse dynamics in baseball. I always think it's more crucial than in any other sport because you guys spend every single day together from like February through September, sometimes October. I was thinking about this week because Mauricio Dubon gets traded to the Astros and you've been traded, albeit it was in the offseason. How does a clubhouse dynamic change when you lose a guy who, by all accounts, is a good guy to be around, kind of a good clubhouse guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been I don't know if conditioned is the word, but like, our clubhouse has had so much turnover in the last 3 years. You know, we've had the mainstay guys, but like, we've moved a lot of pieces in and out in the past 3 years that it's almost normal, if that's, you know, kind of the case, if that could be said about like guys just coming and going. But I think that's just kind of become like baked into the culture of like what we do and how we win and like what, you know, like the revolving door of guys that are going to kind of come in and contribute. It's just worked for us. And I think that like, we've kind of just embraced that idea of like, okay, like we're going to have these guys here and then we might have guys that come in and, you know, play 10, 15, 20 games for us and like, you know, help us win ball games. Like, that's just the understanding is like, it really doesn't matter. Like, anybody who walks through those doors is like, you know, a brother and like a guy that we'll support and like, you know, embrace. And then we just move forward from there and you know, go out and try and win ball games. And it seems like everybody that we brought in and everybody that, you know, is kind of in our hitters meetings and kind of bought into our like offensive philosophy, like they just fit in, you know. They, Farhan and Scott have made, and Cap too, have made great decisions on who they should bring in, and it's just worked out for us.
Yeah, it's tough to argue the results over the last couple of years, and even in 2020, just a couple of games out of what would have been a playoff spot. Mauricio Dubon, he was always pretty open about being a Giants fan as a kid right here in the Bay Area, coming over from Honduras. It was a dream come true for him to play with Brandon Crawford. Was there a guy that you ever got to play with or against? And maybe it was Albert Pujols last week against the Cardinals, where you look out there and you're like, man, this is cool, dude, because of what that guy meant to the game.
Yeah, the first time that I ever felt starstruck on a baseball field was the first time I played against Derek Jeter. Just because, I mean, Derek Jeter, like, is who he is. Like, you can't even say, like, Major League Baseball without, like, the name Derek Jeter. But, you know, like, everybody knows who Derek Jeter is. So, that was the first time. And also, that was a team who had a bunch of superstars. Like, you know, that was when they still had Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez and Jorge Posada. I think they might even had Hideki Matsui and so Johnny Damon. You know, there was like a lot of guys on that team, but Derek Jeter was just a guy that, like, I mean, he's the captain of New York, the most, you know, the most valued sports franchise. Well, maybe not anymore, but, you know, one of at the time. And like, this guy was just the face of Major League Baseball. So I was pretty awestruck. And the guy, the other guy that was probably my favorite player and one of my idols growing up was Ken Griffey Jr. And we played against him. He was with Chicago my rookie year, I believe, 2008. We played against him in the playoffs. And there was a moment, like, he just was busting my chops about, there was some jersey situation. I guess Ryan Zimmerman sent a jersey to me in the clubhouse. It was signed, but it didn't have a note. It didn't have anything. It was just a jersey. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, he sent me a jersey, you know? But I wasn't of the understanding that I needed to send him a jersey back. Like, that's what that meant, you know? So I didn't send a jersey back. And I see Ken Griffey Jr. in the playoffs, and he just immediately starts busting my chops about me not sending the jersey back to Ryan Zimmerman. And this is my first interaction with, like, my childhood idol, you know, a guy who I grew up with. Like, he doesn't even say what's up. He doesn't even say, like, hey, how you doing? He's like, hey, man, like, I heard you big league Ryan Zimmerman about the jersey. And I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, here we go. Like, he's just trying to bury me before this playoff series starts. But yeah, so those were the two guys. I love them both, you know, admired them, respected them. And I was fortunate enough to be able to play against them.
Yeah, that's a great story, man. We're not far apart in age. Ken Griffey Jr. was one of my guys too. I loved watching him play. Prettiest swing in the history of baseball. It's up there, right?
Prettiest left-handed swing, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's hard to compare lefties and righties for some reason. Left-handers usually just have, like, a little bit sweeter swing, but I think it's just because they can lean towards first and be going that way already. But yeah, I mean, he's up there for sure. Miguel Cabrera is, I love Miguel Cabrera's swing. He's probably, you know, tops on my list for right-hander swings, but there's some really good young players that have amazing swings. I mean, Trout is just built to hit a baseball. So his swing is like ideal, and nobody will ever be able to recreate that.
Yeah, he, like, coils. It's crazy the way he unleashes on baseballs through the zone. It's unbelievable. So you were traded from the American League to the National League. You talked about when you came up with Tampa. It used to be that those two leagues were completely different styles of baseball. Now it's pretty uniform across the board. What were the biggest challenges coming over? I mean, you mentioned playing at Oracle Park, like, one time as a minor leaguer. You're seeing guys maybe you had not seen before, playing ballparks you hadn't played in before. What was the biggest challenge going from the AL to the NL, or did that sort of difference in the league not exist anymore?
I mean, it definitely still existed. Just getting used to the guys, you know, getting used to, like, the division and the players that you're going to play against on a everyday basis. I mean, when you're somewhere for 10 years, like, you have this level of familiarity, obviously, like, with, you know, starting pitchers, bullpens, ballparks. But not only that, travel, hotels, you know, schedules, like, all of those things, like, the things that as fans you probably don't think about, you know, because it's just like an on field game. Like, off the field stuff is you know, sometimes just as difficult for players in terms of getting their families to places, and just understanding, like, how to get into ballparks and, like, where to eat on the road and, like, you know, little things like that, like, you figure out, and it's not, you know, super tough, but, like, it's a change, you know, and it's something that that is all new and unfamiliar, and, you know, it takes a little while to get used to.
So last season, the first time I was looking at your baseball reference page, it's been 8 years since you'd been to the playoffs before last year when you guys took on the Dodgers. Yeah. What's the biggest difference in your mind from regular season to postseason? And did anything change in that 8 year gap from the last time you were there?
Yeah, I was more nervous, you know, just because I think we got into a little bit of a run there in Tampa where it was like, oh, you kind of expect to be in the playoffs, and then playoff baseball doesn't hit the same way, if that makes sense. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, we're supposed to be here, and you know, when it comes, and you're just like, okay, like, we know what to expect. Like, last year, obviously, we expected to be there as well. Like, we were a great team the whole year, and we knew we were going to be in the playoffs, but it's just different when you get there, you know, like, feeling the environment again, like, having, you know, 30,000 people in the ballpark for batting practice, like, the music loud, there's a bunch of media on the field that's not there, like, during the regular season, you know, national news crews, like, a lot of different things. Just the way you enter and exit the ballpark, like, there's more checkpoints. There's just, like, a lot more that's going on during the playoffs, more media appearances, like, before the games, kind of, like, required stuff. But, like, that's what makes it great. You know, that's, you understand that, like, all eyes are on you. There's only, you know, usually two games or three games a day at most. It's just, it's a special experience, man. And something that, like, I was reminded last year, you know, never to take it for granted, because it doesn't, obviously, an 8-year gap, like, it doesn't come all the time.
Yeah. It's always, even from a fan's perspective, I think it's really special when you haven't been in a long time. And not that last year was a total surprise. I think 107 exceeded everybody's expectations, but there's something special about not being there for a while and then getting back in and sort of having that playoff anxiety that you sort of talk about. There's hype, there's excitement, but there's also a level of nervousness. I think it pours over to the fan base as well. It's pretty fun to watch, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we really enjoyed it last year. Obviously fell, you know, a little bit short, but I mean, it was a special, you know, whatever it was, 10 days, five games. And I thought, you know, everybody did everything that they could, you know, obviously from the beginning of middle of February all the way until the last day. I mean, guys showed up every day, committed, and it showed in the records, and it showed it by, you know, us exceeding all of the expectations.
Before we let you go, Evan, I just want to end it with kind of a fun one here. Did you, when you were a kid, do you ever keep score in baseball games?
I mean, I know how to keep score for the most part, but I never kept score.
Okay. Can you name the seven ways in baseball scoring that you can reach base? There are seven different ways to reach base based on baseball scoring.
Oh, my God.
Can you name them?
Seven ways, really?
There's seven ways, yeah.
I mean, a base hit. A walk, a hit by pitch.
There you go. Halfway there.
Reached on air.
Right.
Catcher's interference.
There you go.
What is that, five?
That's five.
I mean, are you including like intentional walk?
No, that counts as a walk.
That counts as a walk. Five. What, I got five and there's seven?
You got five. You got hit, walk, hit by pitch, error.
Strikeout.
Strikeout, catcher drop. That's right. That's six. And then there's one more scoring way to get on base. It doesn't help. It doesn't help your batting average.
Oh, like fielder's choice.
There you go. Fielder's choice. That's it. You got all seven, yeah, man. Sometimes people forget the third strike and the fielder's choice. That's a fun one to have, dude. It's crazy. Seven ways. Evan, I appreciate the time, man. It's real fun catching up, and love the Ken Griffey Jr. story, man. That's the one that'll make headlines, I think, from this podcast.
Yeah, right on. Well, that's a true story, and he'll probably attest to it too. I was rattled, really rattled.
All right. Good deal, man. Good luck rest of the season, man. We'll catch up with you later. Thanks so much, Evan.
All right. Thank you. See you.
What a great conversation with Evan Longoria. Back in the lineup, Giants continue to get more and more healthier. I just love that story about Ken Griffey Jr. and Ryan Zimmerman in the jersey. It's so funny, man, just not knowing the etiquette when somebody sends you a jersey at the big league level. I guess they do that now more in football and in soccer. You see that internationally, teams and players trading jerseys after games. I think it's happened in baseball periodically, but certainly not part of the culture. But when you send a guy a jersey and you autograph it, he better send you one back of him. So great stuff from Evan Longoria. Great insight. Lots of good stories shared. So thanks so much to Longo. Thank you to Kelsey, our producer with the Giants. Thank you to you, the listener. If you're enjoying the podcast, why don't you subscribe? Don't miss an episode of this. We're going to have one every single week. If you missed the last one, a great conversation with Buster Posey. And fresh episodes coming to you every Thursday throughout baseball season. Until then, this has been the Inside Giant Moments podcast. I'm Adam Copeland. We'll talk to you next week.